Well, tonight we'll continue our study talking about not bearing false witness, not lying, and that we should tell the truth, and the truth, there is truth, and the truth is from God's perspective, not from fallible man's perspective. Even this week, there's an article in Business Insider that was trying to combat the new abortion law that's gone into effect in Texas that's outlawed abortions after 6 weeks or when the heartbeat. And actually that law has been designed where any person can sue abortion clinics for $10,000 per abortion. And so it's trying to take it through the civil court to basically threaten them to have to be bankrupt because they have to pay out all this money. And the Supreme Court upheld it for the time being. Well, this Business Insider article was talking about an ultrasound at 6 weeks, and they interviewed a doctor who specialized in OBGYN. Preface this that not all doctors are like this. There are good doctors and bad doctors. This doctor said that the beating sound you hear on the ultrasound is not a heart beating. It comes from the ultrasound machine itself. And so what everyone has who's gone to their first doctor's appointment after realizing they're pregnant, and they show the baby, and you hear that ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta, and it shows it's at 150, 160 beats per minute, and they say, there's a heartbeat, it's going. Apparently, that's all been a lie. Well, no, of course it hasn't been a lie. The person who's being interviewed is the one that is lying, and it's all because they want to try to remove the sting that God has created us, and that even at the early stages of 6 weeks, babies have a heartbeat. Because if people had that plastered on the TVs and thrown in their eyes, it will pierce the conscience of some that, oh no, this is a real child, it has a heartbeat. Because everywhere, how do we usually understand when someone has died? They no longer have a pulse. So we see that this is just one example of lying, and we have a whole new term for it. It's called misinformation. That's either through social media or through other means. So this is an important issue that we need to tackle today so that we, living in this milieu, recognize that no, we cannot lie. It does not please the Lord to lie. It pleases the Lord to tell the truth. So we're going to talk about the ninth commandment today, which is this: you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. Throughout the Bible, we have so many instances of lying. Kevin DeYoung, in his book, details it, so I just want to read this for you. He says, we see lies in the Bible from start to finish. The serpent was the first liar. Jacob lied. Laban lied. A lie led to Christ's crucifixion. Ananias and Sapphira told a little lie. They sold some property and gave the proceeds to the church. What a nice thing to do. But they lied about how much they had given. End quote. And so what happened to them? Did they get a little slap on the wrist? God struck them dead because they had lied to the Holy Spirit. We need to have a much greater understanding of the seriousness of what it means to lie. So what does the ninth commandment require? It is this, that I bear no false witness against any man, neither falsify any man's words, nor backbite, nor reproach any man, nor condemn any rashly or unheard. I must avoid and shun with all carefulness all kinds of lies and deceits as the proper works of the devil, or I will stir up against me the most grievous wrath of God. In judgments and other affairs, I must follow the truth and freely and constantly profess the matter as indeed is, as well as defend and increase as much as is in me lies the good name and estimation of others. So we shouldn't use words to attack people, to spread rumors, to ruin reputations. Instead, we should replace that with having true words that builds people up, that encourages people. So we're going to go through several of these things. First, the simple truth. We should not lie. We should not bear false witness. We should not say people have done things that they have not done. Proverbs 19:5 says, "A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will not escape." Well, that's what's so interesting about a lie, isn't it? Is that we think, oh, it's so easy to do, and oh, there are no consequences to doing it, and so I can get away with it. What happens? You start lie. You have to have a great memory to lie, because you have to remember all your lies. Because if you don't remember your lies, then someone's going to catch you in your lie. Proverbs 19:9, "A false witness will not go unpunished, and he who breathes out lies will perish." Proverbs 21:28, "A false witness will perish, but the word of a man who hears will endure." And then Proverbs 14:5, "A faithful witness does not lie, but a false witness breathes out lies." So God is calling us to be true witnesses, to be faithful witnesses, to not exaggerate, to not change the story, to not make up things, but to speak the truth as it is. The second thing, and more specifically, is that we shouldn't falsify or backbite against others. Psalm 15, 2 and 3, this is in the context of who can ascend the holy hill of God. Of course, ultimately, it's Jesus Christ. But it says, "He who walks blamelessly and does what is right and speaks truth in his heart, who does not slander with his tongue and does no evil to his neighbor, nor takes up a reproach against his friend." Isn't it interesting that in that passage is talking so much about how to use your tongue towards your neighbor? And that is showing and revealing how we are to live holy lives by the grace of God. And of course, Jesus Christ did this perfectly. He always made the right estimation. He always spoke the truth. He never slandered. He never gossiped. Instead, he always used his words in a way that honored the Lord, honored God. Another example comes from Romans 1. Of course, we're so familiar with this passage, but verses 29 through 31, after talking about homosexuals and women with women, men with men, it says, "They were filled with all manner of unrighteousness, evil, covetousness, malice. They are full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, maliciousness. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil, disobedient to parents, foolish, faithless, heartless, ruthless." Right there in the heart of that passage, it mentions gossips and slanderers. A gossip, of course, is someone who's a rumor monger or a tale bearer, going around spreading things, tales to everyone else. A slanderer is one who speaks and engaging in speaking against or insulting other people to try to ruin and cut down their reputation so that other people will not trust them. Here's what John Calvin says about this passage. "Whisperers or gossips and slanderers are to be thus distinguished. The former," so the whisperers, the gossipers, "by secret accusations break off the friendships of good men, inflame their minds with anger, defame the innocent and sow discords. And the latter, through an innate malignity, spare the reputation of no one, as though they were instigated by the fury of evil speaking. They revile the deserving as well as the undeserving." So the gossiper goes around and through spreading these tales, pits people against other people and creates discord and disunity. The slanderer goes around and cuts down people's reputation so that people will believe the worst possible thing about them. And see, all this is done through the tongue. And as James says, which Lord willing we'll get to in chapter 3, the tongue is the smallest of instruments. But just like a rudder on a boat, a large vessel, or like a spark that starts a fire, it has enormous, devastating consequences. All it takes is a spark and dry tinder, and now you have a forest fire that produces hundreds, if not thousands, of acres that are burned from little spark. In the same way, one little tongue that causes gossip can ravage a church or people. The third thing is that we shouldn't condemn any person rashly or without hearing from them. In our jurisprudence, we say you're innocent until proven guilty. All our principles we draw from Scripture that establish that. We don't consider you guilty and then you have to prove your innocence. No, there is the assumption that you are innocent, and there has to be enough evidence, sufficient evidence, to be able to cross that line. And we would, every one of us, if we were put on trial, would want to have a trial instead of someone just saying, no, you're guilty, go to jail, we're not going to hear your defense. Well, Luke 6, 37 and 38 says, judge not and you will not be judged. Condemn not and you will not be condemned. Forgive and you will be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your lap. For with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. So one of the things is we may hear someone talking about someone else and we immediately accept their interpretation of events and what they have to say, and we condemn that person without even hearing their side of the story. And yet, if we were being talked about, we wouldn't want to be condemned without someone hearing our side of the story or without being able to present evidence. That's why Deuteronomy 19, 15 through 19 says this, a single witness shall not suffice against a person for any crime or for any wrong in connection with any offense that he has committed. Only on the evidence of two witnesses or of three witnesses shall a charge be established. Well, why? To protect the accused. That a person is who is accused, you'd be able to say, nope, there's one, there's two, we have three people who've seen this take place. It's not just one person having a vendetta against that person. It continues, if a malicious witness arises to accuse a person of wrongdoing, then both parties to the dispute shall appear before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who are in the office in those days. The judges shall inquire diligently, and if the witness is a false witness and has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him as he had meant to do to his brother, so you shall purge the evil from your midst. So in that context, the penalty for lying and making false accusations is the penalty for the accusation you had for that person will be yours. So if you accuse someone of stealing something from you, then the penalty for stealing would now be your penalty that you have to pay because you made a false accusation. In the New Testament, this principle of two or three witnesses is picked up upon in Matthew 18 in church discipline, and in 1 Timothy 5:19 when it talks about accusations against elders, that you do not entertain any accusation unless there are two or three witnesses. Interestingly, a couple of years ago, we had the Me Too movement that took place, where all these people are coming out and saying that these famous people, politicians, news anchors, actors, producers of movies had been doing things behind the scenes, and now people were saying these things. And the whole mantra was, believe the women. Now, obviously, the things that are being talked about in this of sexual harassment are condemned by God. At the same time, the way that they were trying to bring forth justice was wrong too. There has to be two or three witnesses. Because if you just say, believe women, it's assuming that a woman can't lie. And unfortunately, anyone can lie. All people can lie. And so because of that, there has to be two or three witnesses. The fourth thing that we need to learn is that when we lie, we're imitating the devil. John 8:44, Jesus was telling the Jews, you are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. So, when we lie ourselves, or when other people lie, we're not imitating God, who cannot lie. We're imitating Satan, who lies all the time, who is a slanderer of the brethren, who is trying to stir up discord. Charles Spurgeon says of this about Satan, "Falsehood is his natural element. When Satan deceives, he only acts according to his nature, which is blackened with falsehood through and through." Revelation 12:9 calls Satan the deceiver of the whole world. And then Proverbs 25:18 says, "A man who bears false witness against his neighbor is like a war club or a sword or a sharp arrow." So we're imitating Satan, and our goal is to pierce, stab, hurt someone else, which comes from a heart of malicious anger. Because of this, our fifth point, if we're imitating the devil, then we can't be surprised if we are stirring up God's wrath against us. Proverbs 12:22 says, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight." You know, when it comes to politics in our country, we just kind of assume, yeah, our politicians lie. Isn't that awful? That we have people going around who are politicians, and we just expect them to lie, we expect them to tell half-truths, we expect them to spin things, and that this is part of the game of politics? No wonder God's wrath is upon us. Or Proverbs 6:16-19. A famous passage. "There are six things that the Lord hates." Let's stop there. What do you think are six things, then he says a seventh, that the Lord hates? What would be the first seven things that come to mind? Well, it says seven that are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, so being prideful. A lying tongue. And hands that shed innocent blood. Would you put a lying tongue and murder, abortion in the same categories? A heart that devises wicked plans. Feet that make haste to run to evil, a false witness who breathes out lies, once again lying, and one who sows discord among brothers. When you have a lying tongue, you have false witness, and you have one who sows discord. Those are three things that are done with the mouth. And this is what God hates. An example of this comes from 1 Kings. Remember, you have Naboth, who has a wonderful vineyard. And Ahab looks across the way and wants that vineyard. He's coveting the vineyard. And he goes and says to Naboth, "I will buy your vineyard. Whatever you want, whatever price." And Naboth says, "No, it's in the family. I want to keep it." And so Ahab goes home. And what does he do? He has a pity party. Because he doesn't get what he wants. And since he's not getting what he wants, he is sinning by pitying himself. And so his wife, Jezebel, has an idea. "We will have two men make false accusations, and then we'll have Naboth killed, and then we'll get the vineyard." Oh. So 1 Kings 21:13 says, "And the two worthless men came in and sat opposite him, Naboth. And the worthless men brought a charge against Naboth in the presence of the people, saying, 'Naboth cursed God and the king.' So they took him outside the city and stoned him to death with stones." So they had two witnesses. They were both false witnesses. They said he blasphemed God and was blaspheming the king. And so they stoned him. And Ahab got his vineyard. And so Ahab lives in prosperity, doesn't he? No. This stirred up God's wrath. A few chapters later, Ahab goes to battle. He's dressed as if he's not a king in order to hide himself. And it says some random arrow was shot into the air and it struck him and killed him. Of course, we know it wasn't random. It was God providentially bringing that arrow to bear as his wrath upon Ahab. Then you fast forward to 2 Kings 9, and Jehu's going after Jezebel, and he comes to this building, and Jezebel is up on the upper floors, and he calls for her, and so the people just push her out. She falls down, and she's dead. And then the people decide, "All right, well, let's go and eat." And then when they go to get her body, they can't find it because it's been consumed by the dogs. And this all came because of God's wrath upon their lying, which led to murder because they wanted a vineyard. The sixth thing we need to learn is that we need to speak the truth and defend other people's reputations. Part of loving our neighbor is that we protect our neighbor's reputation. Ephesians 4:25 says, "Therefore, having put away falsehood, let each one of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another." So we should speak the truth to one another. That means we have to reveal what we're thinking and saying to one another. And we should speak the truth about one another, because we're all members in this context of the body of Christ. Earlier in Ephesians 4:15, he says, not just speak the truth, but speaking the truth in love. So there is a possibility, a great probability, that we can say something that is true and accurate, but the tone or manner in which we speak it is sinful. And usually this comes out when, I know when I was young and really big on first into open-air preaching, and you just want to see everyone as a nail, you just want to hammer them, and you have no love or compassion for them. You're speaking great truth that all people are sinners, that you're going to go to hell and be there for eternity. They need to repent and believe the gospel, but you don't have compassion for them. You're not being patient with them. You're not being gentle with them. Speaking the truth can be difficult, especially if you're trying to do sales. I have an example from my life where, not proud of what took place, but several years ago, I tried to sell life insurance while I was in between positions for about 8 weeks, and I ended up quitting it. They had a scheme that, in retrospect, was a bait and switch. One of the things they tried to do is they had these boxes that was to where people could write their name and information and put it in it. And these boxes you would take to businesses and ask if you could have that there. And it was to ask for a child safety kit. And the idea was that you would get a pamphlet, and it would have people fill out the information about their child and put their picture in it. And then they would have it available so that if their child went missing or was abducted, they'd be able to give that pamphlet to the police, and they'd already have a picture that was hopefully up to date, and they'd have information about the child so that they'd be able to send that out as soon as possible. So that's a good thing, right? Well, the thing that was the evil part of this is that it was just to get your foot into the door. So you go around to the businesses, collect these things, call the people up, say, "I have your child safety kit. Can I set up an appointment to go and give this to you?" "Oh, yes. How about 7 o'clock Tuesday night?" "Okay." So you go in 7 o'clock Tuesday night. The first 10 minutes, you show them the child safety kit. And then on your computer, you start talking about the need for life insurance. Well, on your phone call, when you're trying to set everything up, you mention nothing about life insurance. You mention nothing that you are in sales. It's all about this child safety kit. Like, well, you're telling the truth partially, but not fully. And then when you put these kits into the businesses, you're telling them this is a child safety kit. You're not telling them I'm using this to solicit information so I can do sales for life insurance. Why? Because if you told them that, they would say no. So after 8 weeks, I finally, my conscience was just convicted that this is a bait and switch. I can't do this anymore. So I remember I went back to every establishment and I pulled it because I didn't want them to have that there. And I told them that this is really for life insurance. I remember going into the Dairy Queen and telling the manager, he's like, don't tell me. Because he didn't want to hear what was really happening. And I remember going into my manager's office and telling them, and he was trying to say, but people need life insurance, and this manager lost a child that was quite young and wished he had life insurance then. I said, I understand, but it's not worth lying to get people to have life insurance. It's a bait and switch. So how can we apply this? Well, there are simple ways. First, do not lie. We shouldn't lie on our taxes. We shouldn't lie about our height and weight. We shouldn't lie about our abilities or experiences on a job resume. There's been several times where college football coaches have had to resign because their resume was forged. There's even a guy, what was his name? Coach O'Leary. He was hired to coach at the University of Notre Dame, and he had to quit and resign a couple of weeks later because it came out that his education background was not really accurate. Also, this means that we shouldn't twist people's stories. We shouldn't tell stories that we make up. We shouldn't, historians sometimes change the story to meet their theological or to meet an outcome to defend a position today. We shouldn't do that. We shouldn't pick and do history where you pick and choose, but have all evidence laid to bear on it. Or we shouldn't twist people's words and God's words. What was Matthew 4 all about? Satan was quoting God, but he was twisting the words in order to tempt Jesus to sin. So we shouldn't twist the scriptures. Also, we shouldn't slander. And one of the ways people slander the most is by trying to read people's motives. We see someone at church and they're not really that warm towards us, and we then tell someone, "Whoa, what's wrong with him? I think he's upset at me." You have no idea. Maybe he got up in the morning and had a stomach ache. Or maybe his daughter, who's 2 years old, was crying for water throughout the night, and he didn't get much sleep. That happened a couple days ago in our house. We just don't know. But we can be so quick to read people's motives. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 4:4-5, "For I am not aware of anything against myself, but I am not hereby acquitted. It is the Lord who judges me. Therefore, do not pronounce judgment before the time, before the Lord comes, who will bring to light the things now hidden in darkness, and will disclose the purposes of the heart." We can judge people's actions, we can catch people in a lie, but we can't judge people's motives unless they express it themselves. So we need to be careful of that. Also, when we slander, it reveals a heart that is angry. Matthew 5, and that heart is a heart that is not just slandering, but is committing murder in the heart. And that is why it's so serious. Besides not slandering, we shouldn't gossip. Proverbs 11:13, "Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered." Proverbs 17:9, "Whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends." So there are things that may be true, but that doesn't mean I have to tell everyone else. It just needs to stop there. And if no one else is involved and there's no one else that needs to be known, then you just let it lie. That's why Proverbs 26:20 says, "For the lack of wood, the fire goes out. And where there is no whisper, quarreling ceases." So you stop having wood, the fire extinguishes itself. You stop having someone go around gossiping, the fires of gossip extinguish themselves. On the other hand, if we are not to gossip, we are not to hear gossip. So we need to be careful not to listen to gossip. And this is also really difficult with social media. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or even news outlets. There are some that we know for sure, they're in the business of lying. And we shouldn't promote them. And instead, what we should do, instead of not lying, we should imitate God who tells the truth. Titus 1:2 says that He never lies. We also look at Numbers 23:19 and Hebrews 6:18. If we're ambassadors of Christ, if we're children of the King, if we are to imitate Jesus, the one of the ways we imitate Him is by speaking the truth and not lying. Even if it means it hurts our reputation, even if it means we have to expose our own sin, we should not tell lies. And when we do tell the truth, as I mentioned earlier, tone matters. Ephesians 4:29 says, "Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear." There are times we have to say things to people that are hard words. We have to confront people in sin, and we need to do that in love. And tone matters. The way we approach them matters. The time of day that we approach them or the circumstance matters. Is this communicating love? There may be things to our children who have to speak to them, but we can do that in sinful ways because of the tone, because we're angry, because we're upset, or because we're doing it to embarrass them in front of others in order to hopefully that will motivate them not to do it again. We can also do this with unbelievers. We see something that is wicked, that's terrible sin, and so we want to slap people upside the head. But that's not what Paul tells us in 2 Timothy 2. He tells us to be gentle and patient with unbelievers. Doesn't mean we water down the truth. It doesn't mean that we gloss over really important, tough things that the Bible says, that no one is good, no, not one, that there's hell and damnation, and that there's going to be a judgment day. No, but we should do so with an attitude of love and compassion instead of really hatred in our hearts. And that's why as people who believe that in the doctrines of grace, believe that God can only resurrect a spiritually dead person, we can do this not trusting in the flesh, in our words, to pierce the heart, but trusting in God to use His words to pierce the heart, even if it's with tears in our eyes. And that's why we have to be careful that we have both truth and love. Because God has both truth and love. So friends, may we be people who imitate God. May we not lie, but tell the truth, because God is truth.